Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 773. We are recording on Thursday, April 2nd, 2026. My name is Martin Spriggs. This is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me at that corner, that intersection of ministry and technology, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Good morning,
Fancy
Martin.
Meeting you here.
Yeah. Fancy meeting you. Apparently the intersection is on Maundy Thursday this week. So welcome to Holy Week. And
yes,
such an important time in the life of a Christian, as it was the most important for our Savior Jesus. So happy to be here.
We pray that all of our listeners had. You'll probably be listening to this after Holy Week. You probably have things to do, but that's fine. We are glad that you tuned in and are listening to us talk about technology and ministry. And if you've been listening for the last 6 months,
year,
you've probably been hearing us talk about AI pretty consistently. And that's because everybody else is talking about AI. And we're trying to find those niches, those corners, those pillars of interest that affect ministry, and how AI can be an aid, an assistant, an intern, whatever you'd like to call your little AI friend or friends. And we are trying to focus on one particular feature, maybe is the best word for what we're going to talk about today. And we'll just call it, because each of the AI platforms calls it something else, we'll call it workspaces. And what we mean by workspaces is the ability for your AI assistant to collect knowledge that is useful for future questions, activity, work. And they do it a little bit different way, and they do it with different tools that are named a little bit differently, but they all do it, which is probably our clue that they find that this is a sought-after feature and something that's useful. And me, from personal experience, can agree with that, that it is helpful to create these little corners of AI knowledge so you don't have to start fresh every time you begin a conversation. Sal, has that been your experience?
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. And I guess one good example for me, I always refer to Wells Tech as my brain because of typing up 772 previous episodes and all the links and topics that we've discussed and all that time. That goes all the way back to 2008, Martin, and my brain gets fuzzy. But an AI workspace could ingest all of that and be very sharp on all the different things we've talked about since 2008. So having a friend that knows things is helpful, I think.
Yep. So let's talk about four of them. They're kind of big for the big four, we'll call them at this point. I use Claude a lot because I think it is maybe the leader of the pack when it comes to coding and content creation as well. But I think all of them probably do a credible job in what we're asking them to do. So Claude calls these workspaces projects, as does ChatGPT or OpenAI. They call those projects as well. Google Gemini, I know a lot of people listening to our podcast probably use Gemini because it is part of the Google experience and comes with workspaces. And what they call, what Claude calls projects, they call gems, just specialized agents or specialized collection of content. And then finally, Microsoft 365, which we also use here at the Senate office, Copilot has what's called Copilot Notebooks, where you can gather all kinds of things. So the way I'll explain it the way Claude does it, because I'm most familiar with that. It will allow you to write up a set of instructions. You kind of give it the basics. You can even have Claude help you or your AI help you write up these instructions. So you give it very specific things. So for instance, I have a project called Wells Tech. And you were referencing, the usefulness of having the AI be very comfortable with our content. So I point it at obviously our show notes page, but I also give it things like, here's the typical format for our show notes. Here are some guidelines for, let's say, writing a show notes or a show summary, or for naming a show. We will often use, or I'll often use AI to give me a list of possible names of a show based on based on the show notes, or based on actually the transcript. And that's another thing that you can do with a project is you can say, when you get a transcript, so I'll always give it the whole transcript, which Zoom gives us. We're recording in Zoom and it gives us I think it's a VTT file, and it will read it. You could also give it an audio file and it would do the same thing, but we've already got the transcript, so I give it to it. And then I tell it, this is the typical format. So we start with an intro, we have a topic, sometimes we have an interview. So I give it all the things that I want it to pay attention to. And then it is essentially ready to answer questions or do work on my behalf. So you can also give it files. So we've written a book in the past. So I've uploaded the book we wrote, and other things that are maybe good assets for it to have at its disposal when we are chatting. So that's a great example of, a very singular topic, and you want it to just kind of think about these things, but not the universe. But these are the important things. So does that make sense, Sally?
It does. And I guess just another personal example from me is I do a lot of data reporting. So I have actually Copilot agents that are set up that help me with coding or particular syntax. So I use SQL, I use Visual Basic, I use DAX, all these different syntaxes kind of lay out different commands differently, obviously. So it's able to help me discern the right way to say things to communicate with the computer. And I don't have to tell it every single time, I'm using XYZ and I need to accomplish this, in the context of our church data or whatever. It allows me to ask questions without having to give it context all the time.
It's kind of like the difference between a substitute teacher and the classroom teacher who has all the lesson plans, has built the lesson plans, knows the students, knows what the classroom rules are, and can go dig right in versus starting from scratch and really knowing nothing other than just a few bits and pieces. So there's a big difference. So let's talk about some use cases from, let's say, ministry position perspectives. So let's say you are a school principal. How would you use Claude Projects or Gemini Gems or any of these workspace tools? So what I would do, and I can kind of relate this to other stuff that I do in a church context. If I were the principal, what you could do, upload all your handbooks, all your curriculum material, school calendar, newsletter archives, relevant emails or conversations, faculty meeting notes, just the stuff that matters that you might want to refer to as you're building stuff. Could be all your policies, or so you're writing a new policy and you want it to kind of have the same flavor and format as your current ones. So if in your project you have all that stuff already, you're one step ahead. You don't have to kind of tweak it to kind of get it to right where you are. You can say, use the same format we've used for other policies. So that's one example.
Yep, and giving it some specific instructions allows it to perform kind of in the same lane as things you've done elsewhere. So, an example might be you're telling it how to behave. Maybe you tell it to always write at an eighth grade reading level, or frame everything through a Wisconsin Synod Lutheran lens. So maybe you go as far as giving it the "This We Believe" or whatever that allows it to start a lot further down the road than it would if it's just starting from scratch.
Yeah. One thing that Claude does, and I'm not as sure that the others do this, maybe they do in some way, shape, or form. Claude takes that project instruction set and all the files and then begins to build its own, what it calls memory. I'm just going to open up one here just to take a look. So I've got my WellsTek one here. It has both the instructions, all the files I've given it, and then what it calls memory. So and I didn't write this. It kind of keeps this and it ultimately updates it. So it has written who the hosts are for WellsTek and some of their background. It captures some of the topics that we've talked about. It also highlights some recent picks of the week, or key learnings and principles, or tools and resources. So it's like I'm looking at it now, and it's got because I used it to prepare for this show. And one of my picks is a markdown tool. It actually has gone back through and looked at all the relevant picks and conversations we've had about markdown files over the past, which is pretty cool. So it's going to use that, as we explore different topics and try and expand on different things and create content. So pretty helpful. Sally, one thing that we did just before we started recording was we asked our AI to write an infographic of the topic. So that both helps us and it helps you. And so the infographic basically goes through the four different AIs we've been talking about, gives pricing, gives a bulleted list of their feature sets, all from the perspective of this kind of workspace concept. So it doesn't give all the things about all the things it can do, but it kind of gives a nice understanding of the topic in the context of our show. So it will not kind of drift into other areas that we don't care as much about, but it kind of knows what we talk about on the show, who our audience is kind of important. And then it almost always, whenever we ask it to do some of these things, it'll say, well, this content or this tool is best for, because it knows we have an audience made up of pastors, teachers, principals, staff ministers, lay leaders, and it tries to help us understand who our audience would be and who's going to be the most interested in these particular tools or segments of a tool. So that's super helpful.
And we haven't really talked a lot about the pastor side of things. Obviously, you want to give it a lot of context if you're expecting on the church side of things, maybe I should say, for it to support you there. But I think that the same rules apply. You would give it your church mission statement or constitution or whatever it may be, perhaps past sermons,
Newsletters,
topics,
bulletins, yeah.
Bible studies, topics you're researching or whatever it may be.
Strategic plan.
All those things would feed in, and then you basically have given it a brain and it's not going to have amnesia each time it tries to answer a question for you. It's going to do it in context with the same kind of voice, that kind of thing. So I could see it being very helpful, in any kind of office situation like that.
One advantage that GEMS has, if you're a Google Workspaces organization, is you can point it at Google Drive content. So all the others, for the most part, you are, well, maybe Copilot would be an exception, but all the others, you're basically uploading files, and those are essentially static. But for GEMS, for instance, if you've got a school handbook that gets updated every year, it's going to suck in the latest content rather than the static content that you uploaded. So it's going to go out and say, oh, you've got a new handbook version on Google Drive. I'm going to use that instead. So it kind of becomes a kind of a constant synchronized tool for the latest and greatest versus you having to do any maintenance. It kind of does the maintenance itself. So that's super helpful.
And pricing wise, technically it's the least expensive because it comes along with Workspace. If you are a Workspace user, it's not an add-on cost in comparison to the Microsoft side. If you have Microsoft 365, you have to pay over and above that licensing $30 per user per month. So pricing wise, Google definitely has an advantage there.
For sure. So just a couple of other use cases, and they don't all have to be related to your profession, but for me, obviously a lot of them do. I have one called Lutheran Theology. So I pointed it at the Lutheran Confessions, Luther's works. I've uploaded other, This We Believe, some content from, truly good Lutheran sources. So it's kind of the project I play in if I've got theological questions or I'm exploring devotional illustrations or Bible studies. That's kind of the place I go to because it's going to restrict or create boundaries. Now, obviously, it's not foolproof, so you're going to want to vet it and check it. But it's a better starting place than just kind of the wide open prompt that you would get with a ChatGPT or Claude or whatever. A couple other use cases. I mentioned Wells Tech, the Wells AI Task Force. I have a project just for that. So all of our meeting notes and discussions and documents that we've created and our charter are all in there. So it kind of gets us. So that's a good starting place for work there as I'm crafting agendas or other content material. The Synod's Christ Through Us Long Range Strategic Plan is a great example of a project. So we keep a lot of our work in Trello. So what I have done is in the instruction set, I give it the outline of the Trello board, and when I do an export from Trello, it knows, what a list is, and it knows what a card is, and it knows how we're using goals and objectives, and where the KPIs are, and all the formatting that we use there. And when I want a quarterly report, I ask it to do it in this format, so I don't have to kind of go through that each and every time. For church work, obviously, that makes a lot of difference here too. If you're on a church council or you lead a church council, you can throw a lot of different content at it. Or even personally, I've got a project called Home. So all the things related to my house, so maintenance contracts and schedules for changing the air filter and versions of that and things that I've had done and who to call for different things, contractors that I've used in the past. So it kind of knows, and I'm building this as I go, all the things about my home and what is involved with kind of home maintenance. And then it becomes very much more knowledgeable and kind of can help me with scheduling, can help me with reminders. can help me with who to call for what. Those kinds of things are super helpful. So that's
Yes.
just an example.
Sounds really amazing. So it seems to beg the question, what's the downside? Where's the challenge here? And I think it can do so much for you, but your brain and your discernment still have to be the bottom line. So if you're using it in the ministry setting, if you're using it in a home setting, for me, I look at it and go, wow, that's really amazing. But obviously, this is not in line with what I want to think or do or say. It almost makes your job easier to identify where things fall off the rails and stuff, because that's what you have to do. You always have to use your discernment, your judgment. It shouldn't, make the final decisions for you. It's not the same as pastoral care or teacher evaluation. It is an assistant, and God's blessed us with an assistant, but we have to keep it in its proper place.
And there is it's not a no energy or set it and forget it kind of scenario. I mean, there is maintenance. There are things that you need to craft for it, and the better you craft it, the better the results will be. But even when you get what you feel are good results, there's some work there to do as well. That this is not foolproof, and the ability for it to hallucinate or make things up or kind of lead you down the wrong path, you'd almost always want to check sources and understand why it is suggesting or providing what it's providing. So it goes without, kind of almost goes without saying these days that happens on a regular basis. So,
And transparency is another thing that kind of goes without saying, but you want to, have full disclosure. Maybe a good companion document to every single one of these different contexts that you set up is our AI ethical framework.
which leads us right into our ministry resource
It
segments. How
does.
nicely done. I like it. Why don't we
Uploading
bring that
that,
up on the screen too? So we mentioned this. I don't know if we mentioned this last time, but maybe it was last time. But I'm gonna mention it again. We have a whole section on our show notes site, wellstech.wells.net, at wellstech.wells.net/AI. And on that site, there are a number of resources. We've got some sample. We've got links to the shows where we were talking about AI, but there's a couple of Google Drive links there that hopefully you will find useful. The first one is kind of just a shared drive of AI resources. And in that are policies, sample policies, and these documents that Sally just referenced. So there is a AI framework that we put together from the Wells AI Task Force. There's also a stewardship and risk assessment of AI resources. And then we also just put out a survey summary, Wells AI Task Force survey summary. Back in the fall, we asked many of you, I think we even asked our listeners to fill out an AI survey. And this is the results of that survey. I'm not going to go through the details because I'd love for you to come here and read the survey results yourself. But it helps you kind of connect the dots as to why we went the directions we did with the framework and with the risk assessment document, because it was super helpful to hear your voice and what some of the needs are going forward. One of the things that we'll be working on as a task force is use cases, or what we'll maybe call case studies, of AI uses within ministry context. And that came out pretty loud and clear when we talked about looking, or when we analyze the results of the survey that was something that came up a lot. How do we use AI in our particular ministry context? How do I use it in the classroom? How do I use it in the church office? How do I use it when I'm thinking about putting a newsletter together, or a rubric? All those things were things that we listened to and hopefully will respond to. And there is a survey form, and I think we put this in the show notes before, but we'll do it again. That if you have any feedback to provide on the framework or the assessment or even the survey summary, please use the form that is available for feedback. And that is going to provide us a more structured way of looking at your feedback and then taking that and making improvements to those documents. So please take advantage of that feedback form that we've created.
Yeah, and I will definitely throw that in the show notes. It was 2 episodes ago, Martin, that we shared that on March 5th. So I'll repeat those links so you can have access to the risk assessment as well as the framework and the survey that accompanies.
Very good. So that is our ministry resource. I think we are up to the point in our show where we have our picks of the week.
And I'm going to
Sally?
talk about something non-AI. I'm going to break the
Good
tradition
for
of this
you.
show and talk about a hardware pick that I have. And this isn't a new thing for me. It's something that I purchased a while back. It's actually a new printer, an Epson Echo Tank. And I've had it probably about 3/4 of a year. And I just came around to the point where I needed to refill my tanks. So that was kind of a pause for me. You can actually generate some statistics about how much you've printed and things like that. So when you buy the printer, it comes with 4 bottles of ink, and you actually have to go through the process of dumping those ink bottles into the printer yourself. It's pretty clean and easy process to do. They kind of latch on to the nozzle that it pours through, and when you're done, you just pull it right off, and there's no ink spillage or anything like that to be concerned about. And then it prints beautifully. I will say, I have had a love-hate relationship with printers, actually more along
I think
the hate
everybody has,
side,
yes.
and especially buying those print cartridges that end up costing me $30 or $40 each time and run out really quickly. These ink bottles, and let's see if there's an image here that I can share, they refill really easily. And they lasted through almost 3,000 prints for me. I was really surprised at how long they lasted. And yeah, there's kind of a photo. Let's see if I mouse over it just right. It kind of shows how you refill. And the tanks show down at the bottom of the printer. You can see how much ink is in the 4 different tanks. So you have a black, yellow, magenta, and cyan to cover your different colors that you need. My black did go down a little bit faster than the others, but it wasn't really a huge difference. They all kind of went down together, and over almost 3,000 prints is really impressive to me. I print a lot of color and really great quality. I always get frustrated if I haven't printed in a while. I get lines in my print and have to clean the print heads and things like that, but I would say it seemed like it was less with this printer. I don't think I spent a lot of time doing that. And when I reordered ink, I didn't order the brand name. I ordered something from Cebu and got an extra black ink cartridge in the mix, all for $21, which is less expensive by far than the print cartridges I was buying before to feed constantly to my printer. So, I've refilled with these inks. I'm happy with them as well. They have great reviews on Amazon, and very affordable. So I'm giving this printer probably the best printer recommendation I've ever made because it's a lot more affordable. It's easy to use. I'm actually considering buying a second one and putting sublimation ink in it so that I can do sublimation printing, which is easy to iron-on to t-shirts, and also even wood, I've heard. So I'm real into the wood side of things now, and I'm going to try some sublimation printing onto wood at some point. So really am happy with the Epson Echo Tank series. I think there's several in the series. So the one I have is a 2800, but there might be other features that you'd want that you'd find in other printers. But yeah, just wanted to recommend it. And oh my goodness, while I was searching Amazon, I found the cutest little tiny llamas that you can order there too. So, you never know what you're going to find when you get in that Amazon space. Anyway, we were talking this morning, and one of our coworkers has a habit of hiding little miniature animals all over their parents' house every time they visit. So they just restocked with hundreds of miniature eggs to hide in their parents' house this weekend during Easter. So they'll be finding eggs for a while all over the place. So I had to look for llamas. Doesn't that make sense?
I would expect nothing less.
Right.
Nice. Very good. Yeah, I'm
My
a big
pick.
fan of the Epson Eco printers as well. We have a, I'm looking at it right now, a 3750. It's actually been around for quite a while, but has Wi-Fi built in. So it just kind of sits in the corner and does
Yep.
its thing. So, and yeah, the whole filling thing is, I'm gonna have to look at that. That print supplier, print ink supplier, because it ink is outrageous. Sometimes it costs even more than the printer itself. So crazy. Good deal. Nice pick, Sally. All right, my pick of the week. Let me see if I can share. I don't share my screen very often, but I'm gonna give it a shot here.
It's a skill that you need to work on.
I know, but let's see. Let's go right there. Okay. My pick is a Chrome extension. It's probably available for Edge as well, as Chrome and Edge play nicely together with ex as far as extensions are concerned. It is an extension called Markdown Viewer. And one of the things that AI tends to want to do when it produces documents is it kind of always wants to give you, at least as one of the options, a markdown file. And a markdown file is essentially just a text file. And there are different codes you can embed in the markdown file for headers and for bullets and for checkboxes and for tables and those kinds of things. And if you look at a markdown file, kind of in a text editor, it's kind of unreadable. I mean, it's readable, but it's not a enjoyable experience because that those formatting marks you kind of have to sift through and whatever. But there are many tools out there that will actually show you the formatted version of a markdown file. And I thought, there's got to be an easy way to do this right within the browser, and sure enough, there is. So that when you get a markdown file, whether that's an attachment or downloaded or whatever, all you got to do is throw it in your browser, and it will format it for you. So I'm just going to throw in a file here. So all you do is drag it into your browser window, and this was just a markdown
Beautiful.
file that now is nicely bulleted and segmented and headlines and checkboxes and all the things. And all I had to do was throw it into my browser. And it knows what to do with it. So that's kind of nice to be able to just use a tool that you use every day to view it. There are plenty of other viewers, like if you use Visual Studio Code or Drafts, or there's kind of dedicated viewers for this. Markdown is the preferred format in Trello, for instance. So you could really just throw it in there as well. But this is super simple. If you get a file, you just throw it in there, and voila, you've got a good formatted version of the file, and you can print it to PDF from there, or however you want to, whatever you want to do to treat it. So you don't need a separate tool. You just need your browser. So thought that was worth sharing. Markdown Viewer is free. It's easy to install and configure. There's some good help documentation, and it works with something you already have more than likely. So if you've ever gotten those markdown files, those .md files, and you're not quite sure what to do with them and you really don't want to read them in your text editor, which is probably the default program, when you try and open it on your local PC or Mac, it's going to be a lot better experience if you throw it into a viewer. So that is my pick of the week.
Good to know. I like the simplicity of Markdown and the universal use of it that you can just easily decipher it in those kind of methods. So that's a
Yeah,
good
and
pick.
Markdown is not hard to write. You get the hang of it, especially the headers and the bullets and those kinds of things. But it's still nice to be able to read it in a format that is a little bit more pleasing. So, Markdown Viewer, Chrome extension.
Good stuff.
Sally, let's move on to community news and feedback.
Yep. Quick screen share to announce a conference that's coming up this summer at Bethany Lutheran College. This is from the Center for Apologetics and Worldviews, which is an ELS group that looks at apologetics and keeps kind of the pulse of that and reports things and that kind of thing. And this year, believe it or not, their 8th annual summer meetup is going to focus on artificial intelligence. Go figure. It says, is AI a giant leap for mankind, a return to Babel? How can it be harnessed and used well? What are the implicit dangers? How does it impact Christian anthropology, the image of God, a liberal arts education, human relationships and interactions, and what comes next? Excuse me. They've lined up three speakers. So this is going to happen June 24th and 25th, which is a Wednesday night into all day Thursday. And they have someone speaking on explaining AI and then a couple of speakers on a deeper look. So AI explained by Reverend Jonathan Connor, and then a deeper look by Dr. Adam Braich and Dr. Brandon Steenbach, friend of our show. So, if you are interested, it looks like registration is at no charge. You just need to get the information and let them know you're planning to be there. But if you want to have lunch, they're suggesting a $10 donation for lunch on Thursday. So could be some interesting discussions happening. I'm sure it will be some interesting discussions happening at Bethany this summer.
Nice. Yeah, Bethany puts on a good conference. We've attended those in the past, and if I had had these dates available on my calendar, which I don't, unfortunately, I would definitely be there. So if you're interested in AI and ministry, this would be definitely a place to find people to talk to about it and hear some interesting perspectives. So good job, Bethany. Blessings on that conference. All right, Sally, that is going to about do it. We are so thankful for our listeners and you coming back. You do have choices, and we're glad that you made this choice to listen to us today. And we'll do the best you can, the best that we can. If you have suggestions for show topics or people to interview, please let us know that. Email us at wellstech@wells.net, and we would be very thankful to hear your suggestions. And as we put together shows, and we've got some changes ahead for Wells Tech. We're moving over to a different platform. There will be probably a companion URL. We are moving kind of our wells.net to a wells.org space, although
Wow.
wells.net will still be supported. But you'll be able to find us at wellstech.wells.org as well. And just made a little bit more sense because we are an organization. And so we made that decision. So you'll see a few changes on how the show notes page looks, but same great content. And we are very appreciative for all of Sally's work and keeping those notes up to date. And as she mentioned, there's a lot of thinking there. So we're
It's
trying
my brain.
to bring all that over. Yeah, very good. Thank you, Sally. Blessed Holy Week to you and to all of our listeners. And looking forward to rejoicing again and looking into that empty tomb and knowing that that was all for us. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.